Republican Representative Mary Chaya of Irma, is only in her second term, but she's emerging as a leader in the Assembly, especially because she just got appointed to the Joint Finance Committee. Representative, thanks for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in.
What intrigues me, a few things intrigue me about your background. You are on Joint Finance now the year after your second diagnosis with breast cancer.
Yes.
So how does a brush with a serious illness influence your goals as a lawmaker? Do you do things a little differently?
I don't know if you do things differently because you still have your core values, but I think you just take a look at life a little bit different. You know you may not be here for the long run, so there's a passion to get things done and to really help people and get the answers that they need. You know, whether that's issues with medical issues, whether it's taxation issues, property issues, DNR issues, business issues. You want results faster.
I wouldn't be a good reporter if I asked, how are you doing medically?
I'm doing wonderful.
Oh, congratulations.
It was a long year. It was my second diagnosis, and it was stage 3. But I did the chemo surgery and radiation, and I just, you know, I'm still cancer-free. So every 3 months we'll
One of the things that experiences is how state dollars, health care, limits on state dollars. We were just talking about Medicaid, so mm-hmm. How does it change the way you look at how much governments at the federal and state level can do for health care?
It does. I do believe that everybody should have access to health care, but I also pretty much believe that everybody should have a copay, have some personal investor into their health care and their health care needs. The state of Wisconsin, right now, the budget is tight, and people are, you know, like, well, we need money for this and we need money for that. And, you know, we gave taxes back in the last session. We did some income tax and property cuts. But I think what people really need to realize is the size of our budget. It's the largest revenue budget that we've had. In the biennium, there'll be over $1 billion in new revenue, and the majority of that is going to fund Medicaid.
Almost 2 out of 3 of those dollars.
And it's first draw. I mean, we don't have an option on that by federal law. So when that amount of your new revenue is being eaten up by Medicaid, it doesn't leave a lot for the other issues that we have. And I think that's something that we really need to take a good look
and
at.
And the Democrats, you've heard their idea. Let's take the federal expansion because that would be worth $300 million in additional federal dollars that would help with the overall budget picture. And your response?
It doesn't help anything. What it does is it insures 89,000 people. It doesn't fill any holes. It adds new people to the Medicaid, and it's not 100% payment. And as we go forward, now we have those people on Medicaid, and the federal government's going to back off. Those people are now being shifted over to the exchange, where they're still getting a subsidy, and they're still being taken care of without state dollars. So taking the Medicaid expansion it doesn't solve anything.
So you're very happy with the governor's position. Don't take it.
Yes.
I'm so intrigued by your background in a couple other ways. I read your bio, and you have a small business,
mm-hmm.
and your father, your grandmother, your uncles have small business.
Yes.
So what can state government do to help small businesses, just generally?
Regulation, reporting. You know, we collect information from people, and we regulate you to death. And what government needs to do is get out of the way of the private sector and let them do what they do best, and that's create jobs, fund our economy, and get things done. Red tape is the killer of small business.
And then another thing that really intrigues me, coming from Irma, I looked it up on the census
yeah.
figures. Irma lost 15% of its population
yeah.
from 2000 to 2010.
Yeah.
So you may be the one on Joint Finance that comes from the smallest community.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on how rural areas, small towns, can thrive for future generations? So your kids, your stepchildren, aren't all heading off to the cities or Chicago or Madison or Milwaukee?
I'm actually glad you asked that. We did, last year, myself and Representative Rob Swearingen, we asked the governor for the Rural Schools Task Force.
Yes.
One of the things that we're seeing in northern Wisconsin, I'm going to just say northern Wisconsin, but it also affects other rural areas. We have a very aging demographic, and yes. we have declining enrollment in our schools and young people that don't return to the area with their families. So we looked at the rural schools platform and what we can do there. But also involved with that, there's a gentleman, he's in my district, he's in a northern district, but he's very, he's instrumental in helping schools get broadband with broadband expansion, and in addition to that, to do fab labs. So it's a form of STEM technology, and it's a public-private partnership with the 3D printers, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So our goal is to have one fab lab in each county of the 12th Senate District. The idea behind that, Steve, is if we can get these public-private partnerships, and in order to be a fab lab, MIT certified, you have to open that fab lab up to the public and the private sector. So businesses can come in and use that equipment to grow their small businesses. In turn for that, they actually help fund the lab. We're working with UW-Stout on the curriculum. So little bitty Three Lakes in northern Wisconsin has a fab lab. Tomahawk's looking at it, Minocqua's looking at it, Merrill's looking at it, Antigo. If we can build a workforce, and this isn't going to happen overnight, a lot of the jobs that are in demand right now in the northern areas and to get jobs to expand in that area are what we call mid-level jobs. It's not a four-year degree and it's not high school. But if we can increase that technical education, math, science, technology, and math, and get these kids...
Oh, the STEM, science, technology,
engineering, and math.
Yes.
And get these kids interested in it and good with it, because we start in kindergarten on this, you know, where they're making Christmas hornets and things, and it bisects girls and boys. They all get involved in it. We can develop that workforce. My thought is that we will have companies that are going to start looking at us as an area, and investors also. That's the only way we're going to turn around the Northwoods or rural areas.
Now, do I smell a JFC budget amendment coming on this issue from you?
No, this is all being done private. We're not asking for money on this. Okay. There are PSC grants that help them get going with this, but in order to make this work, you have to go out and you have to get your private sector involved in it.
Do you have to have broadband then in all of these areas that, for these projects to work?
In the schools.
In the schools.
The actual school. In fact, we did our one agency briefing or budget listening session, I should say, in Brilliant High School.
Yes.
And they have a phenomenal partnership with Aaron's and other businesses in town, and they have a working fab lab there that's like nationally known.
Tell me about the 35th District. Who are the biggest employers? But maybe we should start with the announcement yesterday that Gemini Cares is closing. I mean, this is a home care company that provides services in two counties you represent.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Where are people now getting help from Gemini Cares going to get the in-home healthcare that they're not getting?
There are other providers.
There are.
But I'm right on the edge of the district with the family care and IRIS expansion. So
yes.
A lot of the MCOs are starting to move into that area. But there are others. CCW is a community care, I can't remember the acronym, but they're a home health care provider, and there's other carriers in the area.
Okay, so you're not worried that people, has your office been getting calls with Gemini?
No, nothing.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Now,
no.
Tell me about the 35th District.
35th District. We used to be more of a farming district, but over the years, I mean, when I graduated college in the 80s, I insured like 50 farms. We have none now. So it's just, you know, it's declining with the large CAFOs and the small family farms are gone. So that's kind of moved away. What we do have is the paper industry. I have Packaging Corporation of America is my largest employer in Tomahawk, which is a paper mill making corrugated medium.
Is it doing well?
Very well.
Okay.
I have Louisiana Pacific, which makes a T100 siding. They make a hard siding that's used basically in the southwestern states. And they just did an expansion in Tomahawk, so they're doing very well. I also have a Harley-Davidson plant. And we do a lot of the plastics up there and a lot of the custom paint jobs. So we actually have two facilities in Tomahawk for Harley-Davidson. Merrill has a lot of manufacturing, windows, doors, and they also have a very good kept secret is Church Mutual employs over 700 people in the Merrill area.
Yes.
Amazing employer, amazing to work for, and they're really doing well. Good supporter of the economy. Antigo, a lot of potato farmers over in Antigo. Manufacturing, we have Amron, who does bullet manufacturing casings for large shells. We also have a subsidiary of Waukesha Bearing. We have a baseball bat manufacturer in Antigo that makes a baseball bat.
What's the name of the company?
Oh, I can't say it off the top of my head.
Okay, okay. But, I didn't know that. Baseball bats are made in Antigo, Wisconsin?
Yeah, and then we have North Central Technical College, which serves the majority of my district, and they have a campus in Antigo. And they've really responded to the needs of the area, so they do like a wood classification, so you can grade wood, because we have a large sawmill industry over there. We have Kretz Lumber, and then logging is, and forestry industry is huge in the area.
Was there any one issue that got you motivated to run for the assembly in 2012? Was it the rules and regs on small businesses or something else?
No, I was. It wasn't on my radar. I served on a national board for insurance and was kind of in the process of moving through the chairs on that. And I was approached to run. And at first I was like, I'd never really thought about it. But when I took a good hard look at it is when I graduated college in the mid-80s and bought an insurance agency, a family-owned insurance agency, and did very well. It was easy for me to get started. I basically could pay my tuition in college, you know, by working hard in the summers and maybe do some waitressing. And I just didn't see opportunities like I was afforded. That, you know, credit had dried up, it was harder to get credit, it was harder for kids to, you know, they were coming out of school with a lot more loans, and I just didn't think that we were going in the right direction. That we needed more small business owners in Madison, and we needed to look, you know, really hard at the Northwoods.
Did you hold any local office then?
Never.
County? No. Village? Town?
No. Nothing.
Right into the state assembly?
Yes, and I never worked on a campaign, never ran a campaign, never campaigned for a thing.
Well, how do you like the world of politics then?
I like 90% of it.
Okay. And the 10% you don't like?
Yeah. It's very hard to go out and ask people to support your kid, financially support your kid. That just goes against my grain of being self-dependent. So that's the hardest part.
But it's pretty nice when you don't have
an opponent?
When you don't have an opponent.
Very nice.
How much higher are the barriers for women to enter this world of politics in the Capitol?
I don't think they are. I really don't. I'm going to probably be the one exception. When I entered the insurance field and I would go to company meetings, I was in my 20s and an insurance agency owner, and I was an anomaly. But I never felt ostracized. I felt welcomed by the industry. I don't think you can ask for special treatment because you're female, but I think if you just toe the line and work hard, the doors are open.
Are younger women thinking about politics asking you about it? And if so, how do you answer?
Some. In fact, I'm doing an interview with a group of young women from the University of Green Bay on how I got here and, you know, what it takes to get here. I just say it's hard work, you know, and keeping nose to the grindstone. Listening more than speaking, I would say, is a good thing to tell all young people. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see the barriers.
Most second-termers don't end up on the finance committee. Why was that so important to you, and what have you learned serving on finance?
Well, we had a unique situation, too, because we had three people that retired out of the assembly. Sure. So we had three openings on joint finance, which was unique. I fought for joint finance from the standpoint that if I'm seriously here to get the job done, it is where I can do the most for my district. So I'm either in, I don't want to do it halfway. Mm-hmm. I want to be in the whole way and really get some issues done for northern Wisconsin.
And is it like you thought it would be serving on finance?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, but I also like to read insurance policies, so it falls right in the line.
You've got your two budget books.
Yeah, I know.
Marked.
Yeah, with all my markers and my stickies on it.
You've sat now through dozens of hours on the state budget, so let's talk about some of those issues. Well, first of all, let's return to the issue of rural schools. Is there enough money in the budget for rural schools and their needs?
No, and we can't afford to fund them.
So are you going to be able to fund what the governor recommended for rural schools?
Yes.
But you won't have any uppers for rural schools?
I think K through 12 public education overall, we're looking for revenue estimates to come out the first week of May.
Yes.
If there are uppers in that, I think our caucus, from my take on it, K through 12 is a priority. So I think there'll be money for K through 12 if we have the revenue estimates that we're hoping for. That goes without saying. The rural issues, when you have declining enrollment and you have the districts the size of some of those districts and the transportation costs, what is the magic number to make? In fact, I have a whole school district transportation costs You know, I've got schools in here that are spending $1,900 to get a child to school. When you take that out of their overall spending, that's a lot of money coming out of the classroom.
Yes.
Now, the average state ride is $512 per student. And I have over almost 270 districts that spend over that. How do we even the playing field on that?
Some of the students in the 35th district are on buses to and from schools for how long?
Hour and a half.
One way or total?
One way. I rode a bus, you know, when I was in school in the 70s and 80s, it was over an hour.
Okay.
But so these are 540 or 600 square mile districts. And even though it might be from Mattoon into the Anago Unified School District might be 20 minutes by car, you know, as you're winding through the country roads and picking up all the kids, you know, it adds time on. Lakeland Union High School, they have less than one child per square mile.
Wow. And all of the unique needs or issues,
right,
that poses.
Right. Now, one of the things...
Is there a magic answer? I mean, if you had all the money in the world and you could spend it on rural schools, you would do what?
The first thing that I would do is I would give more flexibility to the schools. Minnesota does this in some of their larger districts, is they'll go to school Monday through Thursday. They close the school down Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Then they go Tuesday through Friday. And they do that so that they can save on heat, electricity. Busing is a huge thing. So allow school districts that kind of flexibility. In addition to that, I would let them, I would put more money into broadband expansion so that they had more technology in all the outlying school districts. Under the first TEACH program that Governor Thompson put into place, it allowed fiber to go to one main school in the district. I want to get it to all the schools in the district so that they can use technology for like APV labs, so they can do distance learning, they can do Google Chromes, they can offer more classes without having to have the teacher staff there. We also are looking at alternative teacher licensing for those rural schools. This came out of the Rural Schools Task Force. It's not quite what the governor has in the budget, but the idea is, like Elko School District has 300 kids in one building. So they're not offering accounting and advanced accounting.
Is that K through 12?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, okay.
And they may have five kids that want to take an accounting class. If we could somehow do a shortened option for like the local CPA that would come in and teach that accounting class, and maybe he does X number of hours on the internet as far as how to design a lesson plan and how to, you know, manage a classroom. We're not saying that these people are going to take over, you know, a kindergarten class, but to fill in these niches. The biggest one is tech ed, auto mechanics, machinists, welders. We don't have those teachers available. If we could somehow, you know, alter teachers' licensing so that they could come in, or IT classes up north for these smaller areas.
Our kids in the rural district, in the 35th district, are your high school seniors as well as ready for the workforce or colleges or tech schools as if they were graduating from high schools in Madison, Green Bay, Waukesha? Is there a disparity there?
Let me answer that two ways. Are they ready as far as the base courses? I think yes. I would say yes. Do they have the course options? No.
Okay.
You know, when we looked at what Elko High School offers, they offer like five math classes in high school. Appleton offers like 37. So my options are more, but are they ready in the core classes? Yeah, I think they do an excellent job. One of the things we were charged with on the Rural Task Force was to make sure that the resources are being used to the best of their ability. I would say those rural schools are going above and beyond and doing amazing things. One of the other things that came out of the Rural Schools Task Force, and this is a little bit more controversial, is whole grade sharing. Iowa has done this for years, and it's been very effective. And it can be done two ways. If District A and District B, maybe they have six kids in third grade here and seven here. Mm-hmm. Well, they combine that third grade. That's one way that they do whole grade sharing. Other districts do where they each keep their elementary, and then the middle school would be in District A and the high school in District B. So it cuts down and it combines resources, and it's been very effective.
But you said something in the debate on a bill that has always stuck with me. You said that either your children or your grandchildren did very, very well, and yet when they went off to a UW school, they needed remedial work in English or math.
Yeah.
That must have been news to you as a mom.
it was very interesting because I had a son that graduated with a 3.9 something, and he had taken like the physics and the advanced math and everything. And when he got to Marquette, he struggled. He went to Marquette University for engineering, and he needed help in his base courses. And that, you know, I've heard that from other parents, and is that, you know, something that we just need to look overall at education. I think the next 5 to 10 years is education is going to transform. Because I honestly firmly do, we do not have enough money to continue to fund rural schools with the declining enrollment and to keep all these districts open. It's not there, and I think reality is going to come in, and we're going to look at how do we move forward and how do we deliver education, whether that's at the K through 12 level or even the higher levels. Look at the amount of online courses that people are taking. You know, is that going to continue to evolve? I think
well,
it will.
Well, we talked earlier about MA. Are we able to sustain a MA program, a Medicaid program, now providing help for 1 in 5 Wisconsin residents as Wisconsin gets older, Representative?
No. I know Director Rhodes, and I can't remember what she said, but if we keep going the way we are, 90% of our budget will go to MA in the next, it was like, and it wasn't that long, 20 years or something mm-hmm. like that? Mm-hmm. No, we can't sustain it. We have to take a good look at it.
And part of that debate is the governor's changes to senior care, family care, IRIS, and mm-hmm. aging and disability resource centers. Do you support those changes? Because you've heard some really emotional testimony.
And in fact, yesterday I met with an ADRC. I don't support exactly what the governor's doing, but I know we need to change from where we're at. I think there's going to be a middle ground somewhere.
Okay.
I know that we need to reform it, but right now we have a blank page. You know, if we say yes to this, DHS goes out and writes a waiver to CMS, to the
yes.
feds, and then comes back with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
I can't vote on a blank page to tell them to go ahead and do that. So the conversation is still going on. Representative Dean Knutson is very involved in it. This will be the second time in the budget that he's had DHS. And he's really dug into it. Representative Loudenbach and myself both have issues that connect with it, and we need more information.
After 4 public hearings around the state and 1 in the Capitol and agency briefings, where do you stand now on the governor's proposed $300 million over 2 years cut to the universities?
I don't know. Isn't that a good answer for you?
Would you like it to be less, or you just said the first draw on any new money in May should be K-12, so.
Yeah. It's interesting. We have the UW colleges that are going to get hit the hardest because they're the smaller ones. I don't know what the schools can literally sustain as a cut. I think some schools can sustain more than others. Would I like to see it to be less? Yes. And then we also have the authority.
Yes.
So right now it's kind of working through how much authority with what cut to allow them become more efficient. And I don't think we've kind of found the answer.
But Representatives Nygren and Knutson have said that the authority is dead. Do you consider it dead, Representative?
Not totally.
Okay.
I think there should be some flexibility there. And I think a really good example is when they're building their buildings, new construction, they still have to go through DOA and pay DOA an overage on it for the administration part of that. I think that's ridiculous.
But you don't sound like you could vote for the autonomy, the authority as proposed by the governor.
I think it needs to be tweaked a little bit.
Okay. I'm really curious, are there any vouchers or choice schools in the 35th district?
No.
Okay.
No.
Does that make you less interested in removing the 1,000 student cap?
I firmly believe in choice. I sent my children to private schools when they were in kindergarten through fifth grade. And it was pretty much on the advice of a public school teacher because they taught new math at the public school and the private school taught old-fashioned math, flashcards and adding and subtraction.
Yeah.
So that was a decision that I made. I was very fortunate that I had parents and in-laws that helped us do that. We weren't in a position to do it at the time. When you are a parent and your child is, I'll just say, floundering in school, and you do not have the resources to help them, how do I look a parent in the eye and say, no, you can't help your child? And these are low, you know, vouchers for low-income people, and it has made a difference in kids. On the flip side, we need help in the rural areas and in the public schools. So I've had conversations with Speaker Voss and in leadership, and we're going to work on a goal that helps both. I don't, you know, and the other thing is that there's the sense that if we lift the cap on vouchers, that kids are going to just flock out of the public school system. Right. Why do we think that?
Well, but part of the governor's fine print is he'll only pay for that if they're coming from a public school
Correct.
To a private, no longer from private to private.
Exactly.
Is that a pretty wise spending cap on that,
yes.
Representative?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
I agree with that.
Another major tough issue that you're going to have to vote on first in finance and then on the full budget, transportation funding. Is the governor's proposed bonding of $1.3 billion too high?
Yes.
Well, I heard an initial offer from Representative Nygren. How about $800 million bonding? Were you part of that debate?
No. You know, we've talked about it. One of the things that Representative Nygren did do is he provided us with information. If you do a dollar raise on registration, that creates $4 million of new revenue.
Yep.
So if we go up $25, you're talking $100 million.
Yep.
If we do a penny in gas tax, it's $33 million. And, you know, he gave us other options on that. During the discussions with our budget buddies and in caucus, that's something that we as a caucus have to come to terms with.
Okay.
What are we comfortable with?
But you need good roads to get to Irma, Wisconsin,
you got
don't
it.
You?
Yeah. You know, and it's not just the big state roads. Now we've, you know, over the years, our county and our township roads
right.
have started to deteriorate. We have a lot of heavy equipment up north, logging equipment, logging yeah. trucks, you know, farm equipment. So it's a pressing issue, and it's something we're going to have to deal with.
What about you personally? Have you made peace with either raising the $75 registration fee or the gas tax at this point?
I'm not totally decided. I think there's other factors that we need to look at. I think we need to look at efficiencies in the DOT. That's a huge budget. I think we can, you know, find some efficiencies in that. Prevailing wage is always going to be on the table if mm-hmm. we're going to take a look at that, whether that's repeal or reform. I know that's a very controversial issue.
Is that something that you support?
I support repealing
okay.
prevailing wage.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's realistic. I think, you know, we're going to have to do it step by step. Maybe some reforms in this budget. I just don't think you should charge the taxpayers more than free market. That's where I'm at on it. And it's, when if you read the, I haven't read it in depth, Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance put out a report on prevailing wage. And the hardest hit areas are the northern communities.
Okay. I think your next appointment is here, so I just have a couple more questions.
Sure.
One of them, do your constituents in the 35th District think there should be some type of state aid for a new Milwaukee Bucks arena?
Initially, no. They
zero
don't.
Or
zero.
Small? Or
When we had our listening sessions, the first thing that is said is absolutely not, that's ridiculous, that money should go towards schools. When you sit down and have the conversation with them that we have, you know, we still owe $20 million on the Bradley Center, and we have $100 million of deferred maintenance that has to be completed if we keep the Bradley Center. So the state, and the state owns the Bradley Center. We are on the hook for it, and we will still be in the arena business.
Yes.
So that's $125 million. And it's bonded money. We're borrowing that money and paying it back. So it's not GPR money that could be utilized for schools. So then you have the conversation that if we don't do this, we're going to lose the revenue on the Bucks and the trickle-down effect of that revenue into Milwaukee. We need a healthy Milwaukee to have a healthy state. That's reality. So when I say to people, I'm not comfortable with the $220 million of bonding, but if we're around the area of the money that we still owe on the Bradley Center and explain mm-hmm. that option
Is
to
that
them.
Is that only $20 million?
No, we'll figure in the deferred maintenance too. So
oh,
it'll be like
$120
million.
$120 million, okay.
Yep. So if we're around that number, 120 to 150, and that would keep the Bucks in the state, I want to see Milwaukee and the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee have buy-in on this. And then, you know, when you explain it to constituents that way, they're like, well, I would rather have the new arena and the Bucks stay in the revenue than a $120 million Bradley Center that has no major tenant in it.
Okay, great. What's the best advice you ever got, political or otherwise?
Listen more than you speak. Listen more than you speak.
Getting ready for this interview, I had great trouble pronouncing your last name, Chaya. Is that
yes.
Czech?
You know, it was interesting. When I ran for this office, I thought that it was going to be a big detriment to running because it's not phonetically pronounceable.
That's why it gave me so much trouble.
But it was a lead in the conversations. Okay. Even if somebody didn't want to talk to me about Pollux, or when I knocked on their door, they wanted to know how to pronounce my name and if it was Czechoslovakia. It is my married name. It's my ex-husband's name, and his sister did kind of like a timeline history, and it's Polish.
Polish.
But it's very southeastern Polish, so I'm sure over the years those lines changed a little bit, but it does have a Czech.
Okay.
Check ring to it.
Representative Mary Chayat, thanks so much for talking to Wisconsin Eye, and I hope your every 3-month screenings are clear.
So yes, good luck. So do I. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.